Hello and welcome to the Now Spinning Magazine podcast with me, Phil Aston. And on this episode, I'm absolutely delighted to have with me Steve Howe, from legendary rock band, progressive rock band, I should say, Yes. So welcome, Steve.
Hi there. Hi, Phil.
So you're about to embark on, I think it's a 24-date tour covering Europe and the UK, starting, kicking off in Portugal on the 30th of April, and I think finishing on June the 4th at the Royal Albert Hall. Now, the tour is called The Classic Tales of Yes, and I've seen the set list that you did across the USA last year. Are you going to be roughly keeping to the same set list for Europe?
It's the same set list, but it's not in the same order completely. You know, we've just tinkered the order. And partly because we have, for the first time, we need two versions, which is... We would, in the US, we were doing a 2-hour show. That was it. Good night. But here we're doing 2 1-hour sets. And that's because let me just correct myself. In Europe, we're doing, like I said, 2 1-hour sets.
Yeah.
But in the UK, in fact, what we're talking about really is, ding, 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 wake up, is I think Roger Dean will be doing his introduction. Where he talks about the staging and his album sleeves and things like that. And then we play the same idea we did last year, which is a 2-hour set. But we've adjusted the running order, irrespective of whether there's a gap in the middle. So we just tweak the running order a little bit. And, you know, it's only marginal, but it'd be nice.
I suppose that's because when you put together a 2-hour set, you're thinking about how you're going to start the set itself and how you take the audience towards that last segment. But it goes, if you're going to have a splitting at an hour, you've got to almost have like a mid-set climax, haven't you?
Exactly. Right. Yeah. Well, we might do the ante to that and do a decrescendo, but certainly when we come back on, we've adjusted the set so that we come back on with a song that kind of helps us get back on. More, all will be revealed, as they say.
Are you? Because I know one of the songs that's been in the set is "Turn of the Century." Could I ask whether that's going to appear in?
Oh yeah, the same songs are going to appear. Yeah. "Turn of the Century" is not going anywhere. We love that. It's really challenging, and it's really very warm and beautiful, and does require a certain quiet, you know, to preside, so that we can actually, you know, have the space as well as the music. You know, we're playing notes, but they've got spaces in them, and there's nobody going boof, kiff, boof all the time. So it's a wonderful time.
Because that song in itself, at the time in 1977, I remember seeing you on the Going for the One tour when you did that. Mm-hmm. It's a very emotional song, and it's one of my favourite songs by Yes. And I was just wondering now, when we're playing it all these years later, the audience has been through a lot of life. And obviously the band has been through a lot of life. And I wonder if it carries more emotion now, because it was a very emotive song then. Do you feel that some of these songs carry more emotional weight with them when you do?
Yeah, because although I can look back and look at Yes songs and see how Yes were playing in Yes songs on the film and marvel at the way we were cohesive and driving and all worked together. But also, I said this about Soon, the more times we've played Soon, the more I love it, the more I know it, the more I am it. But it's also true that, I don't know who great musician said it hundreds of years ago, is that each time music's performed, it's the audience that change it. You know what I mean? They're there as well. This is going out, but it's also coming back, you know, and that feeling of sharing a song as intimate as Turn of the Century, which was a real devil to arrange. I mean, we went round the houses. Fortunately, you know, we went round the houses to find a way doing that song that wasn't how we first played it, which was da 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 da. You know, it was just like a strummy kind of song. It didn't have any identity, but suddenly, with the improvisations, you know, we had identity. So, but like you say, I use Soon as an example because I know that's true, that song has gained a lot of depth, you know, with me over the years. It's a wonderful thing to play. It's really tentative and, you know, like it's very emotional. And so Turn of the Century, when I open with that thing, you know, that I go back across the guitar, diddle-dee-on.
Yeah.
There's the, like, that, it sets the mood, and it's really exciting. But so much, I agree with so much what you say, is that particularly I've carried on playing this music, but the people who've listened to it have also had kids. They've had kids. They've grown. We're all different people now, but hopefully that's a richness that, you know.
It's something that, because when I was preparing for this, I was thinking about that song in particular, because I was playing it the other day. Like you say, the audience have had kids and everything, but all of us have also probably experienced loss. The band themselves have experienced loss, and the audience have. And so I think that the song, it's a song like that, carries immense power, really, and almost like it's something I say to a lot of my readers and listeners, is that music has a healing property, and it's that kind of music has more of a definition now, more meaning, I guess I'm trying to say, than it maybe did when it first emerged into the world all those years ago.
Nevertheless, the original recording will always hold the key. You know, entry point. Entry point is going for the one. Johnny opens his mouth and goes, da, 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 da. You know, I mean, it's something that we were very good at doing, you know, like in You and I. That's also a song that the recording is as good as the song. The performance, the recording, and the song are all equal in their reasoning for contributing. Because, you know, without the song, you know, the performers haven't got anything to perform.
That's true.
But, you know, the way the textures are created for those songs is really special. And I suppose that isn't something I alone design, but that I contribute to that designing, particularly when I bring in acoustic guitars. And that flavour was something that Yes hadn't really experimented a great deal with. Surely, you know, Time in a Word starts with an acoustic guitar, you know, the song. But the way that I developed how to use that was, you know, a roundabout the point. I mean, you know, Disillusioned and Clap and Good People, you know, there's a lot of acoustic work going
on.
That's
true, yeah.
You know what? I didn't really know I was an acoustic guitarist. I mean, I was to myself, because I write virtually 99% of everything I record originally came about on an acoustic guitar somewhere, somehow, and I developed it. But what Yes gave me this chance to say, well, okay, that doesn't really matter, that, you know, this is a different perspective. And it, at that time, technology didn't aid you very much to actually play acoustic guitars on stage. It wasn't finessed very much. It was just starting. DIs, you know, Barker's Berries, and plug-in acoustic guitars were just starting to happen. So it was quite challenging. I see that on Yes songs, I think I've got a microphone. Well, for an acoustic guitar, you know, just like, you know, Bob Dylan had, you know. In fact, of course, Bob Dylan had one mic that was just for his guitar and his voice, you know, quite often.
Yeah, so, that's true.
You know, technology has definitely come along. And technology helps songs sound beautiful, and that's how Circle of Time, so Circles of Time on Mirror to the Sky. When John played me that song, I said, John, this isn't about, do I want this to be on this album? Can you let us have this song on this album? Because I think it's so important. You know, we don't need any other songs that are like this. We just need, you know, Circles of Time. And we kept adding things. You know, we did hours of adding things. And then the next day, I'd say, well, you know, that detracts. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
So we didn't hardly need to do anything. So the way that An You and I and Wondrous Stories and Turn of the Century particularly have life, it is a shared experience, you know, with people and the stories. I think that's one of John Anderson's great sort of like remote stories. You know, it's about somebody else's life, when so much of our songs are about our life or the things that we
do. That's true, yeah.
So, yeah. Like Don't Kill the Whale, you know. So John could turn his hand to that. And I love his line that we sing every night, and I'm trying to sing it with John sometimes, that I think I'll go and write a punchline, because that's one thing John never did, you know. But in Going for the One, he jokes that, you know, oh, I think I better go away and write a punchline. So there's a lot of us in the songs, but at times with the song going round on stage so much. So the good songs really work on stage. You know, when we did albums, we get on stage and they didn't work on stage. That meant it was inferior. You know, if you can't take that music on stage, well, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't up to it. And we did make albums, but much of it was very troublesome on stage. I mean, I'm not going to name names or titles here, but some albums were, they wouldn't transport. Close to the Edge, transports, you know?
Yeah.
It's wonderful how lucky we were that we got so many things right. We got a few things wrong, but yes, got a lot of things right. And I enjoy that reality of the luck of getting some of it right.
It must be very exciting for some of the other musicians in the band who weren't there going back to the period you've just described. And you've picked some real deep cuts for this set list. Mm. So did you kind of look at the original arrangements? As you say, the audience will have kind of memorized these as entry points. But for some of the other band members, this is like almost going back as a fan for them to interpret them. And also for you yourself as a musician, your technique is so much different than when you put down, some of these songs, especially Time of the Word. As you say, it starts with acoustic guitar, but you as a musician are a very different person than you were then.
Yeah, and I've enjoyed that. Although in some ways, one thing a musician feels like he can never escape from is himself. You know what I mean? I mean, I play stuff and I go, yeah, I think that works. But in another part of me saying, yeah, but that's what you do. You play like that. So you're not that that's a criticism, but it's just a reality of familiarity that I'm familiar with the kind of things I write. And sometimes I play something on a keyboard and it sounds like the kind of thing I play on a guitar. So developing that, yeah, because somebody asked me the other day, what did I think about when I was young playing the guitar? And I said, I just want to be a guitarist. You know, that was primal. Yeah, the writing, singing, all that secondary. You know, mainly, listen, I'm a guitarist. You know, whether I'm producing, I'm still a guitarist. But I can prioritize my focus, you know, well, and I can do the things I need to do. But basically, being a guitarist and, as I've quoted before, walking on stage and having a couple of hours when there's hardly anything that can interfere with you being a guitarist and not having all the other responsibilities of, you know, what about this and deciding on that and how much is the budget for this and, you know, all the other stuff that's going on. So that is nice. So that's a development of what I was doing. From about tomorrow onwards, I became aware that going on stage was really exciting. You know, you could get a bit wrecked, you get a bit trashed, you get a bit high, do all those stuff. Yeah. I mean, that's then. But like, basically, it created the excitement to want to carry on. You know, this is a force, if you like it.
Yeah.
It's a force within me as much as it's, you know, within Jay Shellham, it's the drumming, you know.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
All got our kind of fundamental, you know, but that's what my career is really about, is being a guitarist. That's why in the latter part of my career, which I hope hasn't happened quite yet, I will be solo, because solo guitar playing is ultimate. It's the pinnacle. It's the top of the pyramid. Yeah. I'm climbing this pyramid of life, and the musical life is solo guitar is far more important, far more precious, and far more of a reality for me than anything else that I play, just because it demands that there isn't anything else going on. And it's just what I do on a guitar when I do that. And Clap was the first piece. And that has never let me down. You know, I mean, there's never been a time when I played that and I thought, shouldn't play. I mean, I don't play it all the time. You know, yeah. If I played it all the time, I'm sure I would have said, it's time to stop. But I never play it and think, well, I shouldn't have played that because it's the kickoff. It's the launch pad for my Mood for Days and, you know, all the other stuff I've written, Corkscrews and, you know, Die of a Man Who Vanished, all that stuff.
Yeah. And as you say, when you're just playing an acoustic guitar, there's nowhere to hide, is there? It's just you. It's just the musician.
100%. It's 100% of me. And that's so challenging and that's what's so enjoyable about it, and any sacrifices I make on the road with a band or one thing, you know, we've got the 2 hour set. And then when I remember how I've done quite a lot of solo tours and how I felt about them, they are a struggle. You know, touring is not, it's not a roller coaster ride. It's a struggle, but the struggle is for the showtime, you know, and that's what's like a sacrificial rite of passage, is that you might have to go through some hell, but you've got to switch that all away and get on with the guitar. And there is no finer moment than, you know, playing without any accompaniment. It's, you know, I can see why people like playing like Bach's cello for solo cello, you know, because if you're a cellist, you would like, that's a great way to play.
Yes, that's very true. The new album, or latest album, Mirror to the Sky, is very much a band project. And also, I know it came out of The Quest, and it's more of a rock album in some respects. It kind of reminds me of the kind of approach that you had with albums like the Yes album. But the title track, I know there's no space in the set for a track that's 15 minutes long. But it's an amazing piece of music. And I think what elevates it is is Paul Joyce's orchestral arrangements. Yeah. And I love the part in the media book where I think you asked Paul, could we just want 16 bars of orchestra there for one part? And I don't think there's many people who could probably interpret that or even go away and do it. I mean, is that because you and Paul are kind of telepathically connected almost?
Yeah, it's like Curtis Schwartz and Paul K. Joyce. I've worked much more with Curtis, in fact, you know, many, 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 many records, maybe 25, 30 years. But the things I've done with Paul were great connections. And we, you know, had a lot of fun on doing Time, my solo album with Paul, doing the arranging. And he tolerated and learned about me over 4 years that it took for us to digest and work on and build up to just one day of sessions where the orchestra were added and the whole album transformed from being this jumbled up, mixed up, different sources and different resources, different instruments. Suddenly it just had one sound, the orchestra, you know, with the guitar. And that was amazing. So Paul did a fantastic job, and he knows that I love and respect him for all that work. So we got to work deep. You know, that was a very deep album. There was a lot to do. So when it came to The Quest, I thought, you know, maybe Paul, you know, could jazz this up a bit, you know, give us something else here. I mean, something we weren't expecting, you know, or draw from the music. And he did a lovely job. And I particularly love, when I said the same thing on The Quest to him, that there's 16 bars, do something, you know. That was on the second song. I can't remember what it's called now because I'm thinking about so many other things. But we should look it up. But anyway, so this is video. this looks bad. My head's spinning with
too many. That's okay. I'll add it. I'll add it in the description. Yeah. Don't worry.
I mean, if I start reading them off, then I'll be there. So basically, I said to him, do that. And what he did was he drew from our music, you know, and that's what he does on Mirror to the Sky. So on Mirror to the Sky, I said to him again after, you know, the previous encounter, do something here and then maybe stay with us, you know. But what he did was actually he does an enormous amount on Mirror to the Sky. And we cited him, you know, come in here, come in there. Because at the beginning, you know, he has a role with the orchestra where I go to classical guitar and start playing with Billy. And we do some things. I mean, the whole, while we were doing that album, we had a few projects like Luminosity.
Yeah, was great track.
To Mirror to the Sky, in the sense that it was invented from different resources, and the way we married them together didn't work first of all. We go, no. Then we go, no. We kind of like slide things around, then we like this. So, but basically, we held on to a dream John and I had about that song. From it kind of started with my, well, not that it started, but the first ingredient that went down was when I sing Dreams of a Sky Without Fire. So that was part of a whole song, and I was really tired of the song. And I said to John, you know, I just like this a lot. I like this, Dreams of a Sky Without Wind, all that stuff. Love that. Let's do that. Let's find out a way of doing that. So we just started to grow bits, you know, and we pulled bits together from some of our writings that we'd done. And so, yeah, I'm very excited about that. Dare to Know is the song on The Quest that I'm yeah. so happy with that Paul did the arrangement on. But so what we did on Mirror to the Sky was the album. He did the song Mirror to the Sky, and then we kind of held it. And I kind of held him back on a whole lot of other things. You know, he does some very intrinsically light things on Circles of Time. Luminosity, he's playing a role in the growth of the orchestra. Yeah. Arts and a few things on, you know, Cut from the Stars. So, yeah, we're very lucky. Paul and I have been working together on some other things recently, and he helps me with some compiling sometimes, but arranging is his forte, and he's a great musician.
No, definitely a classic Yes track, and maybe in a future tour, it will that kind of song would work so well. Now, I wanted to ask you, because I know you're known as Gibson, your ES-175, and I was actually reading an interview you did in Guitar Player magazine from many, many years ago. And the reason I was doing that was because on this album, you play Telecaster quite a bit, which listed that you're doing that. And I know you played Telecaster maybe on Relayer in 74. What? I think that sets you apart. Is most guitarists, when they go through life, they suddenly find the guitar they want to be. They're either going to be Fender, Gibson, whatever, and they just stay there. But you, on this album, you're using Strat, Telecaster, your normal Gibson ES-175. What is it about the Telecaster, which is kind of known as like the bluesy Roy Buchanan, Rory Gallagher type sound, that you're drawn to? Because it's very different to what you were starting with.
Well, as you pointed out, it kind of got going with Relayer, because I played the whole album virtually on that, besides the steels and other things, which are also Fender. So I like Fender steel. I used to play Gibsons on The New and I and on Close to the Edge here and there. But basically, when I got a Fender, I wanted Fender. Fender was my steel sound. So basically, that having those colours was all I needed, you know. And whether it's a Les Paul or a 175 or that, you know, so I can mix bag them. But to come back, it isn't that I've come back to the Telecaster, you know, for Mirror to the Sky, really. It's that it's been there all along. You know, it's on a lot of records. It's on The Quest as well. So it's on all my records, really. The Telecaster has a function, you know, has a role. But in Mirror, gave it a real, Mirror to the Sky song, gave it a real opening, because that the opening that I did was something I played to John. Well, that really, yeah, that became a component after that song I was telling about, the Dreams of a Sky Without Fire. But basically, John and I had already worked on that theme that I had played on the Telecaster. So what I do then is I say, oh, well, that works there then. So that should be a guitar I can play elsewhere in the song. And that's what happens. So when we get to later songs, you know, I come back in the telly, you know, even though I've been veering off in other spheres temporarily. Then at the end, after the orchestra has had its, I think it's more than 16 bars, but it's at least an ample 16 bars of exciting orchestration.
Yeah.
I come hurtling back into it. And that's the most... that reminds me most of Relayer, the end section of Mirror to the Sky, the way I'm playing, you know. So that's the freedom, you know, that I have. It's a wonderfully, I think what you're asking me is, what is it about it? And what it is, it's just that, I mean, certain guitar sounds were created. You know, the Gretsch is a great electric guitar sound. Jed Atkins, you know, did marvelous things with. But when you get to the rock and roll, then, you know, you've got the Les Paul, the Strat, or the Tele, or the 335, which is another very popular guitar, 345. So basically, that covers an enormous ground for me, and I can't make up my mind. Well, I'm not going to make up my mind, you know, to not do any of that, because the 175 is always there when I want it, and a lot of improvising is what I turn to it to do. But actually, that isn't the case, you know, with some future things that I'm doing, where I found that that guitar is great for me to, you know, remind myself and the audience that that my rock roots are still, you know, very deep in the ground.
Do you find it a different, because obviously the Telecaster and the Strat have got obviously different necks, different you know, thinner bodies compared to the Gibson that you normally play. Do you just switch from one to the other without, does it affect your style of playing or your attack on how you use the pick and your fingers?
It affects everything, because as soon as I've made that choice, I've got to make a choice. And it isn't something I droll over, you know, or I just kind of make, it's usually the first thing I think of is usually right. So if I think, hang on, I think I'll play one of them. But when I do that, what happens is my playing is, and the sound is, that's what happens. You know, it's me, but also I made a choice, and the guitar will have its possibilities, potentials, the way I feel playing these guitars. And yeah, I don't, can't really explain how different the necks are. The necks are all different. You know, I mean, they're like walking down a different street, you know, driving a different car, you know, they're different things, you know, the necks really what you're going to be thinking about most. But there again, the look of a guitar, I mean, you know, I mean, why would it matter? Well, you know, great design matters. Architecture matters.
Yes, it does, yeah.
Beauty matters. Nature set the path, you know. So basically, to have something that looks beautiful too, like I believe the 175 was the one most beautiful guitar ever. I still think it is. The most beautiful electric guitar ever made. But the reason was, in 1964, I bought one and sat there and virtually meditated on it just because it was the guitar I wanted. So, yeah, I like enjoying stuff. I mean, I'm not one of those people who wants to sit around moaning all the time. If there's something to enjoy, let's enjoy it. And I enjoy that range. I keep trying to get my guitar collection down. You know, I really try. Mm. But it's still really good. Because I have to have a whole a whole range of guitars to operate on. I can't. But what would happen with one guitar? That's what happens in solo playing much more. It gets limited. Steel strung, classical. Mm-hmm.
I noticed you said in the media book for Mirror of the Sky, you said you used your best Telecaster.
Oh, yeah.
which obviously suggests you have several.
Well, I have had, yeah. I've got two now. But, yeah, the 55, be it that, it was slightly customised, but it did retain the vital, you know, back pickup, that back pickup. The Telecaster, I could talk about Telecasters all night, you know, because I usually cite them when I say, I don't know, I'm 77 and I still like the sound of a Tele. You know, almost, I should be saying 175 or a Martin 018. No, but it's a Tele because that is a hell of a ringing guitar. Look what he did for U2, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And for many people, yeah, yeah.
Albert Lee, look what he did for country music. Jimmy Bryant was the first, you know, Telecaster guitarist to really, really break through with Speedy West on pedal steel. And basically, the Tele reigns in a big way. But think about the Les Paul and Eric Clapton.
Yeah, Strat, yeah.
Think about what the Les Paul's done. And then all the jazz players, which I'm not really one, play a guitar like a 175, you know, L5, C400.
And finally, because talking about Fender, on Cut from the Stars, which is one of the songs I think is in the set from the new album, on the album itself, is that one that you actually play on a Stratocaster with an analog pedal board, if I've got my tracks right?
Yeah, that's what happened on that record. I was at my studio and the song came on board and John had reworked the song and it was right. We just had bass drums, guitar, few keyboards from Billy. Rhythm stuff, and I didn't know what the hell to do, really. I just thought, I gotta do something different. You know, this album can't always be me being this way or that way, you know, like techno guitar or guitar and floaty guitar, all that stuff. I thought, I want something different. So yeah, getting that analog pedalboard going with something, you know, a multi-pedal that Korg made, you know, that auto wah stuff. It started a whole thing, and I was so excited to be playing, you know, really, you know, in an amp and with an analog pedal board. So that was nice. And the Strat's the right guitar for that song, you know, and that's what I do on stage. But I mock that up, that that analog pedal board sound on a Helix, because I only use Helix on stage. Yeah. I don't mess with other stuff. You know, if that can't do it, well, I'm not going to do it. You know, if that it can do just about everything. So I mocked up the sound to make that similar as I could. There's a little things on the record that obviously you can't, production-wise, you can't do on stage, but also the movement of the speeds and things like that. I mean, it's a lot of fun. You know, playing the guitar is still fun, and that couldn't be a better way to finish.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks very much for your time, Steve. That if you want to know anybody, how you can find about the dates or the tickets, go to yesworld.com. And the tour kicks off in Portugal in the end of this month, isn't it? But the UK dates are also on the website as well. Thanks very much for all of your time, Steve.
Right, it's been lovely talking to you, Phil. That was nice.
Thank you very much. Thank you. A huge thank you to my guest, Steve Howe, from legendary progressive rock band, Yes. That was absolutely fantastic, I have to say. I'm absolutely thrilled to have been able to talk to someone like Steve Howe, an absolute hero of mine, a band that I've loved since I was that big, listening to those early albums when I was growing up in the 70s. I just want to say, because I know a lot of people lean back into through the lens of the past, and these bands bring out newer albums and people think, oh, I don't know whether I want to listen to that or not. But I know how well this has gone down, but Mirror in the Sky, this is the media book, which is, I've been playing the Dolby Atmos edition. It's over an hour of music, two CDs in this with three extra tracks. I've got loads of extra questions I could have asked Steve about. Those extra tracks are all written by him. It's a fantastic album, and the title track is a real true Yes classic prog epic. It really is fantastic. All of them, the whole band. Jeff Downes, of course, has been a member of the band on and off since 1980. John Davison, lead vocalist, has been there for over 10 years, you know, longer than some bands are together. Billy Sherwood on bass, because he was handpicked by Chris Squire, and Jay Shedlin on drums, who took over from Alan White when he sadly passed away a couple of years ago. But it's a great album. Please go and listen to it. And if you want to know about the tour, go to yesworld.com. If you're watching this and listen to this, and this is Now Spinning Magazine, so check out the website at nowspinning.co.uk. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. Subscribe to the podcast. See us on Facebook, Instagram, X, wherever you are on social media. So are we. So take care, everybody. Remember, music is the healer and the doctor. Keep spinning those discs, and I shall see you all very, very soon.